You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's vanta.com/simplify for $1,000 off.
Are you ready to start living your best life today? Hey, y'all, I'm Mallory, and welcome to the Living Fully podcast. I'm a wife, mom, and entrepreneur here to encourage you toward a life of joy and fulfillment. My heart of big dreams took me a long way from growing up on a farm in Kentucky, from Miss America and The Amazing Race, all the way to writing a best-selling book and creating two multi-million dollar merchandise lines. Through this crazy journey, I've had a lot of highs and some lows, but I found my true self along the way. So now my hope is to motivate you to find your own version of living fully. Here, we believe you have a choice in your legacy. So let's start living it out today. I'm Mallory, and this is the Living Fully podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Living Fully podcast. I am thrilled to bring this podcast to you, especially in the month of January. January is a month where so many people are looking to make a change to live a better life. And in my own journey and personal experience, one thing that really helped me make a huge life shift was my journey into sobriety. Now, if you guys have listened to me before talk about sobriety, I have a little bit of a different journey into sobriety. While I did traditional treatment and partially I worked with a therapist and I did some of the rooms of AA and different things like that, my version of sobriety is a lot different. It's really tied into the Living Fully message, and I always want to be an inspiration of what life looks like on the other side of this thing. The richness that sobriety brought to me is something that I never could have expected. I thought, oh, I need to get sober to save my life and to get everybody off my back and just to make things okay. I never realized the amazing life that was on the other side of recovery and sobriety. And when I came across a lady named Suzanne Werei of The Sober Mom, it used to be my kind of sweet was her Instagram handle, I realized that she was one of the loudest voices in what I consider like the new age of sobriety. She was someone that was inspiring women that there is a way better life on the other side of this drinking, that she was giving a voice to the voice inside people's heads that keeps saying, this is actually not helping me as a mom. This is actually not helping me in my relationships. This is actually making my life a lot worse. And why are we continuing to glamorize alcohol? And why don't I get curious about what life could look like without it? And I've done a podcast with Suzanne before, and I liked it so much, and there's been so much since that last podcast that I decided to bring her back. And also, it being January, a lot of people who are sober curious or who are just health curious are doing dry January or Whole 30 or something where they are pausing alcohol in their life. And I think this is a really amazing opportunity to speak into my version of sobriety, Suzanne's version of sobriety. And so today I wanted to bring Suzanne onto the podcast and have an amazing conversation that all of you guys can hopefully find some inspiration from or just listen to and be curious about. So without further ado, Suzanne Werei. Okay, let's just jump right in.
Okay, Suzanne. Let's do it. So,
you know, a lot of people are longtime listeners of the podcast, and they have listened to and binged every single episode. We can binge podcast episodes. We don't binge drink anymore. Yes. We can binge podcast episodes.
Yeah, we can binge listen for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, in case there is somebody here who didn't hear that first episode that we did together, can you give me a little bitty intro into your story and, like, you? As a person, as an online presence.
Yeah. So I started influencing after the birth of my first daughter. So that was 10 years ago. I started in just style, and I was dealing with a lot of postpartum anxiety, OCD, and I needed to find myself. So I started My Kind of Sweet, and that was all about style and motherhood. And it was like that for a while. And I even, you know, helped promote drinking, and I romanticized alcohol and made it all look, you know, nice and pretty. And then I stopped drinking in January 2020, like right before, you know, the world shut down. And my drinking story is different in that I, you know, I was a party girl in college and in my 20s. But then in motherhood, it wasn't this, like, you know, huge problematic thing. There wasn't, I didn't get a DUI. Like, there were all of these things that I could point to say my relationship. Fine. Yeah, I'm fine. My relationship with alcohol is normal and there's nothing to see, except I hated it. And I didn't tell anybody I hated it because I thought that that would mean something really bad.
And then I would stop.
I would have to stop. I would have to, like, report to rehab immediately. Right. Like, I would be destined to just, I would be powerless and all of these things. And I just, that wasn't an option. And so I just assumed that, like, I just had to drink better. Like, if I felt the effects of alcohol, if I drank too much, it's because I wasn't doing it the right way. I had to find a better way to drink. And most of the time I did. But I still hated it. And so then when I stopped, I had just had my third baby. He was 3 months old. And, you know, I was, like, getting back into drinking. Because, like, after every pregnancy, I was like, okay, I just have to get over that, like, hump. The hump of where, like, alcohol really tastes like alcohol and it tastes like poison and I hate it. I just have to get past that and, like, get back to where alcohol tastes good again. And I blacked out, which I hadn't done. I think I'd blacked out, like, maybe once or twice in, like, 10 years. And I blacked out and I nursed my baby in a blackout because he was 3 months old and I was still nursing. And I woke up and I was like, oh, I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah.
And I said it, and I had never said that before. And I said it out loud to my husband, and he kind of looked at me like, okay, like, that's cute. Like, and as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, holy shit, what does this mean? Wait, can I swear?
Yeah, you can do whatever. You are who you are. We invite people as who they are onto this podcast. And we've all heard that word.
Okay, just making sure. But I was like, oh my God, what am I saying? Like, don't say that. That's insane. What are you saying? But I felt something like, okay, I'm done. And then that kind of started this next incredibly fulfilling, challenging, and amazing chapter of my life.
Yeah. And gosh, we're almost in 2025, which will be five years.
Yes.
Right? 21, 22, 23.
Yes.
Five years is big. 5 years is big.
It does feel like, it feels like it's not something like I'm doing. It's just who I am.
Yeah.
Like, I'm.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. It's not something I'm doing. It's just who I am.
Yes.
And didn't it, like it did with me, didn't it make for a richness of life that you never could have imagined?
Oh, yes. It's it's almost so, it's so hard to explain it to somebody because it is kind of like, I look at alcohol, drinking alcohol, as you're kind of like in a cult. And you don't realize it. And it's like, well, no, I don't drink that much. And no, I don't black out. You know, I don't. And it's like, no, just try it.
Just try it.
And then come to me and then you'll see what I'm talking about. Like, the colors are brighter. And like,
the colors are brighter.
Yes. The moment.
We describe a lot of these things the exact same way.
Wait, really? Yes. Yeah. Like,
it just makes it just makes for something that you didn't even have before. So many people think that sobriety or stopping drinking or however they want to phrase it is like, oh, well, I have to because I have a problem. That the big piece here is just, how do I stop doing this thing? What they don't realize is the life that you get on the other side. And that is the light that you shine in your community and with your message. And now becoming a truly like modern day voice for sobriety. It is, the way that you describe it is enticing. The way that they used to describe sobriety and alcoholism and just choosing another way of life, depending on whatever you're addicted to, because everybody's addicted to something.
Yeah.
Used to be very fear-based.
Yes.
There is nothing fear-based about the way that you describe it. It is like people are like a moth to a flame to that kind of, wait, I can have a better life?
Right.
Ow. Oh, right. I do this? You know, and that's why I've always been drawn to you in the way that you describe sobriety. Because in my experience, that is sobriety. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is the other side of this thing. And that's why I say it's the best thing that ever happened to me. Having a drinking problem, having an addiction issue, best thing that ever happened to me. It taught me a way to live that I never would have had access to before.
Yes, exactly. I think you and I think so, we're so alike in that, in being thankful of everything that brought us here, right? Because without that, and while my story is different, I was on that path. I mean, my drinking in college and in my 20s was problematic. Like it was party girl. It was drinking to escape and to cope, to conform, like all of the things that we see. And it's insane to me now when I look back and I think, I thought that I didn't qualify for this full alcohol-free life. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that we have and what we've been taught is that like only certain people, only if you are quote unquote, and I use like big quotes on this, like only if you're that bad.
Right. Rock bottom.
Rock bottom.
The seven DUIs, I've hurt someone, I've lost my job, I've lost my family, I'm homeless, I've had an accident.
Right.
Like that is what they think the qualifiers are. When in fact, you said the qualifier in the first part of this podcast already. I hated it.
Yes.
I hated it. The way that it made me feel, I kept it inside, but I hated it. There are a lot of people listening to this podcast that are silently watching you on social media or maybe me on social media that are like, what is it that these women are, you know, what is it? Like, I want it.
Mm-hmm.
I want what's on the other side of this.
Yeah.
And they're probably thinking to themselves, like, is this what's standing in my way from achieving that? Because I kind of feel like I hate it too. But everybody around me seems like it acts like it's the most awesome thing in the entire world. But hey, that's what we looked like on the outside too.
That's the thing. Exactly. Like when we're taught not to talk about our relationship with alcohol, we don't talk about our relationship with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so we're really good at assuming, you know, this person is fine. She doesn't think about her. She's just the unicorn, which is what we've been taught is a normal, but it's not that the unicorn drinker is not the normal drinker. And like, we don't know about anybody's relationship with alcohol. And then, so we assume that we are the problem instead of assuming it's actually alcohol is the problem. And like, you could wait, you could wait until you lose something to alcohol that makes you feel like you're qualified. But if you take a look at your full life, what are you willing to lose? Like, what would qualify you then? Is it your license, your marriage, you know, custody, God forbid, your home, your job, your a friendship?
Or your happiness, or your access to a full life. It's like, yes. why wait for the loss when you can reach for the gain? When right. I see someone like you, it's like, that's the gain. Mm-hmm. And you chose it. Your journey to this mm-hmm. is a lot. This is what is different in our journey. My journey mm-hmm. was pretty rock bottomy. I never had a DUI. I wasn't doing illegal drugs. I was definitely illegally mm-hmm. using the prescriptions I was being prescribed, I'm sure, mm-hmm. if you looked at the details of things. I didn't get in legal trouble. I didn't lose, you know, I wasn't married. I did lose my husband, who was then my boyfriend. I lost him. That was my final straw. Mm-hmm. And I had reached a point, because mine was prescription medication and alcohol, mm-hmm. in my journey where I was a totally different person. But alcohol is so sneaky that it always tells you, like, this is not the problem. Actually, this is a solution. Keep putting a Band-Aid on it. Yes. Keep putting a Band-Aid. If you get a different job or a different boyfriend or this or that, you're going to come out of this and, like, mm-hmm. you know, hold hands with me until you get there. But, you know.
Yeah.
I got to a point where I ended up in a treatment program. You know, my parents facilitated that because they were like, this is the end of the road. And I would not be here had that not happened.
Yeah.
I am fascinated by, Suzanne, people who can quit cold turkey. Mm-hmm. I am very mm-hmm. fascinated by that. Also, the people who can quit cold turkey without the hand holding of professional help, rooms of AA treatment. Mm-hmm. I tried that. And I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So I am curious about that because, like I said, that is not in my world. That was not my journey. But also because I know a lot of people listening to this are in the same phase of life that you and mm-hmm. I are in. They're yeah. parents. They are sometimes like the full-time parent. They're taking care of kids. And it's not as easy as I was like 27, 28 years old. Not really a job. My parents could help me. It was easier for me to get professional help. It is not as easy, especially if you don't hit the rock bottom and you don't have everybody around you in the camp.
Yes.
It's not as easy to take that measure. So I think a lot of people that are listening to this podcast are probably going to be like, oh, I'm going to try, dry January or sober October. Like mm-hmm. they're going to have to be the cold turkey people.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I'm very fascinated by people who can do it on their own, because I'd like to think that I'm a very strong person. I can do like anything. I really can.
I've
always been mentally strong. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do it.
So I think you actually said this to me. I don't know if you remember, and I think you've talked about this before, is changing from a place where you're not forced into change is hard.
It's the hardest. Fine is the new rock bottom.
Yes. Right? Yeah. It's the hardest. And so, yes, like I'm trying to think, because I get this a lot. Like, I wasn't sober curious mm-hmm. Leading up to when I stopped, right?
Yeah.
And then when I stopped, I had no idea what I was doing. And I didn't, all I knew, and I just kept coming back to that moment of waking up on the couch, so hungover and with such shame of having nursed my baby in a blackout. Mm-hmm. And like, I literally just kept coming back to that. Anytime I had like questions about, is this forever? What am I doing? What does this mean? What will happen? No, like I had to block those out. No what ifs. What do I know? I know for sure I don't want to feel like how I felt that morning. And I kind of just made it my entire, I do have OCD. And
which might have served you well probably in this instance. Yes.
I did become obsessed. I had one AirPod in like every day. You know, at this point I had a 5-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 3-month-old. And so I had one ear out to make sure they were like still alive. Mm-hmm, it wasn't about them thriving at that point. I was like, just let me, it's the good enough thing for right now for them, because this, I gotta figure this out. Mm-hmm. And so then I listened to all the Quitlet. I started like saying, okay, how have I used alcohol? Like, what have I lost to it? Let's really, really, really start telling the truth instead of, like, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to. And I just slowly started doing that. And then I didn't keep it a secret. which I think was
that big. Is something that you do have in common with common. Even though AA is anonymity of the program, the secrets keep you sick thing, and you've got to bring other people into your recovery is a big thing in the recovery community and traditional old school recovery too.
Yeah.
And it's important.
It's so important. I was no stranger to feeling shame about my drinking. Mm-hmm. I felt shame about my drinking a lot. And that, I always say it's like mold in the basement. Mm-hmm. Like I was just like the shame, because shame for me was the most corrosive feeling. I didn't want to feel it. I think it's so, it's possible to feel it and you have to feel it.
Yeah.
But you have to do it in a safe space with people you trust, with a therapist. But I would just push it down. And as I was starting to heal and really go through my relationship with alcohol and excavate and like take out the mold, I didn't want that shame anymore. And I didn't feel like my sobriety and my not drinking, I didn't want to feel ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. And it was starting more and more, drinking was starting to feel less like a privilege.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this isn't a privilege that I've lost. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm actually...
You stopped glamorizing it. You looked at the whole hard...
Yes.
You're taking something back. I love mold in the basement. Mold in the basement.
Right?
You can live with mold in the basement. That's the thing. But it will make you really sick. And everybody in your home really sick.
It'll make you really sick. And it spreads. And it festers. Yeah. And like, it's... And the only way... to deal with the mold in the basement is to shine the light and like, let's go downstairs. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just first let's survey and see what's going on down there.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's why then I created this, our community that we have, the cafe, to say like, hey, I think we're kind of all on our own in our drinking. We've been taught not to talk about it. And like, we're just pushing down our shame because I think alcohol brings with it a whole lot of shame. We do things we wouldn't normally do. We say things. We're really our integrity is at stake.
Yeah.
And so, and then just talking about it, like having a place where we can just talk openly about, hey, while I was drinking, I nursed my baby in a blackout. What does that mean? You know, really talking through it. And I can say it easily now because I don't have shame. I have guilt. I have like, that was really bad. Like that was,
you know what?
Good.
That's a,
that wasn't who I was.
It's a gift when you have those moments, especially when those moments aren't the rock bottom moments. It is a, it is a gift. Because it's something too, like in traditional recovery that they call play the tape. They're like, when your brain starts to romanticize the alcohol again, and when it starts to say, you know what? I didn't drink every day. It wasn't like I was drinking vodka in the morning.
Yeah. Yes.
Like play the tape. Play the tape from that moment where it was really bad and where the reality of your relationship with alcohol really came to the cold, hard truth of the forefront of your brain, and you played the tape. And so I think that that in a cold turkey situation, playing the tape is really helpful. And I think something else that you said, bringing someone in on the journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think people don't want to say it out loud because they don't want the finality, because they think if I say it out loud, this is when they give me my ticket to the express train to rehab. Right. And I got three kids.
Exactly. Or like, then I'm like held super accountable and I don't even know what I'm doing.
And like, so how can I survive without it? Because they don't know all the tools. Because you find the tools on the other side. Because alcohol is your tool. When you're still using alcohol, alcohol is the tool. You don't know the tools until you stop drinking and have to find the tools. And so these people that are like, I can't say it out loud. What if I say it to my husband? And then what if I need a glass of wine because, or a bottle of wine because things are so stressful next week. Here's the thing. The sobriety is, it's not a what came first, the chicken or the egg. You can't figure this thing out until you're sober. That's why in rehab, you detox before you start going through the program. Yes. And so in your life, you know, you had to quit cold turkey. You cannot, when people are like saying the delusion of, oh, well, I do have a drinking problem, but I'm only going to do it for special occasions. I'm like, okay. Right. I already know how that story's going to go. Okay.
Yes.
But I'm going to let you figure out how that story is going to go, because I am hopeful that they will then realize that you can't do it That way's harder. I think that way is harder. If you have an issue.
It's so much harder.
And there are people that don't have issues with it, okay? But there, the majority of people, if you think into the back of your mind and your brain and you really think about this, is this really serving your life? Is this really serving you as a mother? Is this enriching the life of your family? Probably not.
And
But probably not.
Right. And how are you using it, right? I think getting to that, like, and it's like, no, I just like the taste of wine. Well, no, that's not, like, think about the first time you tasted wine. We don't like the taste of wine.
Well, guess what? They have non-alcoholic wine too now. If you really like the taste, you can get
that. And it tastes better because it doesn't have the ethanol. Yes. Like, it doesn't taste like poison. But, like, why are you drinking? You know, I hear so, and I think that this is kind of women specific, generally speaking. A lot of women drink to conform. Mm-hmm. Yes, we drink to escape and to numb because motherhood is so hard and there's so much and the expectation is just unrealistic. But we also drink to conform. We drink to, like, well, I don't want them to feel bad. So I'm going to have a glass of wine. In sobriety, I think my favorite part about sobriety is me being able to trust myself and check in with myself and say, how do I feel? What do I need? Yeah. And there's no more of that. Like, there's no more of I'm going to, you know, put what is most important to me and my family and my life to the side to make you feel okay. Like, that's, I don't know if that's age. I think it's age plus sobriety, really. When there gets to a point where you're like, this is the most important thing.
I think it's life experience, and I think it's a lot of things. But I also think with sobriety, within sobriety, comes wisdom. Because wisdom comes from dealing with adversity, from digging things up, from solving our problems, from thinking, oh, this recurring thing in my relationship or this argument with my spouse or this issue with my kids, it keeps coming up over and over. What do I do to solve that problem? When you have the Band-Aid of substance or whatever the addictive substance is or behavior, you never get the opportunity to have those breakthroughs. Mm-hmm. And life is rich because of those breakthroughs. And I see a lot of people hanging on to those things, but wanting for this life on the other side. And I am not I'm not beating the AA Bible here. And I'm not like, this is an end all be all for everybody. You know, I really try to look at every person's situation and like give every person the advice that I feel is the best advice. But when I tell you 75 to 80% of the answer that I know in my mind, just having my own experience with this, is like, get off everything. Just try for 30 days. Do the dry January. Okay.
Yes.
Just try, because I just know the clarity of mind. Then I know the wisdom from removing the numbing substance that will come. Then I know how life compounds on life, and the richness that will be delivered in these little breadcrumbs. And then it's like, you're 6 months into it and you're like, oh my gosh, they were right. And it's not like we know something that everybody else doesn't know. It's because we had issues with it that we had to deal with. And then we got to the other side.
Yes.
When I went into treatment, I thought I was just there to get sober. So my parents would be okay with it. So that I could like live a normal life. So I wouldn't die. And I did not realize the other side. And I just, what a gift it is that we know the other side.
It's so true. It's so true. It's such a gift. And it's such a trust fall at the beginning. Because I like how you said it was like maybe 6 months in that you're like, oh, they were right. Like, we talk about this all the time in our meetings. When we have like people in early sobriety, you know, like a couple of weeks, 30 days, 40 days. And I think it's so important to recognize that they might be sitting there and saying, I don't believe you. I don't believe anything you're saying. I think this sucks. Yeah. And like, this isn't great. I miss, you know, numbing out. I miss feeling a buzz. I don't like going to a social event without being able to drink wine. I miss all of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And yes, because I think the grieving process, like you're grieving something that's been in your life for 20 years, yeah. 15 years, decades.
It's so insidious, like the way that it lies to you. Oh. And the further you get away from the lies, like it is easier to see them. But there in the beginning, it wants you back in the cult.
Yes. It is like a magnet too. Like you just won't always feel that way, right? Yeah. And that's what we say. We're like, yes, we get it. Like this is where you just trust. Like you find a space and you find a community who where you can really show up as yourself and tell the truth. And, you know, jaws aren't going to hit the floor. Mm-hmm. People aren't going to say, you did what? They're going to nod their heads and say, like, yes, we get it. You're on the right place. Yeah. Keep coming. Keep showing up and telling the truth. That's all you got to do. Just show up and tell the truth. If your truth today is, I don't believe you and this sucks, good. Keep going. Mm-hmm. And then just like you're lifting weights, you're getting stronger and you don't know you're getting stronger, right? You can't see your muscle fibers tearing and then repairing and all of that stuff. But you are. And then at some point, and people are always asking, like, when is it? And it's like, well, I don't know. I don't know what it is for you.
It's different for different people. Different people are at different levels of their journey with alcohol or whatever it is.
Yes.
And sometimes, like, you'll have the glimmer of it. Mm-hmm. And you'll have the feeling. And then a circumstantial thing happens in your life. It sends you on a spiral. And you forget. So sometimes it appears and it goes away. And it's like you've got to be strong through those moments because it will come and it will remain consistently. Life is always life. Okay?
That's the thing.
It is just, life doesn't change on the outside, but you change inside of it. And then you in turn really are able to, like, just, it's just such a different thing.
I think what I've noticed, especially, you know, talking to so many women in sobriety, is just how quick we are to, like, discount ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can't do that. I can't feel that. I can't feel social anxiety because I'm not strong enough. I'm not capable. And so give me alcohol to come. I can't deal with the stress of coming home from work and then my kids drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Give me alcohol. And it's just a constant discounting ourselves. Mm-hmm. And really, if we said, like, wait, but you can. And the more you do, the more you can see you can.
Yeah.
And then that just, you grow and then you're like, oh my God, I can actually count on myself. Mm-hmm. And there's, I think I had like a specific feeling with this. I lost my dad just over a year into sobriety. Mm-hmm. And it was a really like traumatic way. We were in a fight. I wasn't there. You know, it was kind of like the worst possible scenario. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Thank you. I think that then gave me the perspective of like, oh my God, if I could do that, if I can deal with that, which I did, I didn't drink. I didn't, you know, if I could do that, then okay. I can go to a party and be awkward. Mm-hmm. Like I can be awkward all day long. That's great.
Yeah. And you know, I just think too, it like, it helps us to hear our own voice. Your voice, yourself will speak to you in your brain.
Yes.
If you can like silence the noise of everybody else's voices and opinions and just random aimless scrolling that fills your time, you have a voice in your head that will speak to you and let you know what you're feeling.
Yes.
That I hate myself right now because of the way that I'm drinking. Yeah. That is your voice.
Yeah.
The my life is worse because of this. I feel like I am not as good of a mom because of things surrounding my drinking, like the more kids I have. That is your voice. Yeah. And you can hear your voice when things start to quiet down. And so many people don't ever hear their voice, or then once they start to hear their voice, they don't trust that it's their voice.
Yes. You know? It's such a good point. I remember feeling in early sobriety like it was learning a new language. Mm-hmm. And I was like learning the language of like my voice and being like, okay, I'm feeling something. What is it? What am I feeling? What do I need?
It?
Like, what are you saying? Because for so long, if alcohol's in the equation, we can't hear it, right? And it's
right.
just
it drowns it out.
Yeah, it's like no, and our be feelings. Quiet.
Yeah.
And the thing that gets tricky is that some people around us, even people who love us, benefit from that, right? Yeah. Because when yes. we don't have yes. like needs, and when we're quiet, mm-hmm. even people who love us, like our partners or our parents, our kids, like then it's easier, yeah. right? But what's the cost? It's like, no, actually moms have needs. We have things that we need to thrive and to feel good for ourselves. Yeah. And drinking really allows us and everybody else not to hear it. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's
the cost.
Dangerous.
That's yeah. the cost to you as the parent, not getting your needs filled. But you know what the cost is to the kids and the spouse? The richest, most fulfilled version of your spouse or your parent, yeah. you will never meet.
Yeah.
You will not be in relationship with that person because that person mm-hmm. will not have achieved that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, relationships, so sobriety, yes, it is a healthier way of life. It is a safer way of life. It is a more vibrant way of life. But the way that it can enrich your relationships with people, especially people that have been in relationship with you in active addiction.
Yeah.
Is really amazing. Do you need a gift idea or a last minute gift? Give your family and friends the gift of language. You can get 50% off of all 25 languages for a lifetime and no shipping fees. Give the gift that keeps on giving. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on most devices like your desktop, phone, or tablet. You can literally learn anywhere. There are no English translations in the product. You're getting trained to listen, speak, read, write, and think in your new language. They offer 25 languages from Spanish to French, Italian, German, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, even Dutch, Arabic, and Polish. And it's all about convenience, too, over at Rosetta Stone. They offer flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with the mobile app or at your desktop on your schedule. It's also an amazing value, especially right now. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Start the new year off with a resolution you can reach. Today, Living Fully listeners can take advantage of this New Year's special of Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your New Year's offer at rosettastone.com/today today. All growing up, my papa taught me all about money and the value of money. How to earn money, how to spend money, how to save money. And now I'm trying to teach my kids the same lessons that my grandpa taught me. So let me tell you about a tool that could help you and your kids learn the importance around money. Acorns Early is a smart money app and debit card for kids that helps them learn the value of money. Just set up chores on the app, set up a payment amount, then tick off the chores as they're done. No more rummaging around for cash. Automatically send a weekly allowance to your kids' accounts with just a few taps. Get real-time spend notifications. Set your kids' spending limits and instantly block lost or stolen cards. Acorn helps your kids turn saving into a habit. Kids can use their app to set savings goals. They can even choose their own target dates and turn on optional autosave features to help them to get there. I think it's so important to teach your kids early how to use money correctly, and it's a lesson that they will take on with them for the rest of their lives. So if you're ready to help your kids learn the value of money, just head over to acornsearly.com/livingfully or download the Acorns Early app to get started. Sign up now, and your first month is on us. Terms and conditions apply. Monthly subscription fees starting from $5 per month unless canceled.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I can remember, you know, the closest relationships that I had at the time when I became sober was, like I said, Kyle, my husband. He and I were dating. And he dated two different people. He dated me before in active addiction, then he dated me after.
Yeah.
It was like learning to ride a bike again, like starting, even though we had dated for a long time, it was different. I was different. And we have the most amazing relationship now from having fought for that relationship. I remember a therapist was like, looked at us literally in a therapy session and said, "It's a wonder you two are still together." And I was like, is that like a, should we get a plaque or something? Because you're a really good therapist. Thanks. So what you're saying that to us is not good.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people think of sobriety as this is my issue. It's going to enrich my life on the other side. But when I tell you it will enrich your relationships, it is a beautiful thing.
Yes.
So tell me about how it's enriched your relationships. How has sobriety affected your relationships? And are there ever times where you're like, oh, this is like awkward and like this is like, you know, or has it just been like, what is it like on the other side? Tell me about that.
Okay, awkward. I feel like I'm just always awkward. And so that's
You're not awkward.
I kind of am, but I kind of lean into it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm going to be the one who says the weird thing. And like, that's okay in social situations.
Yeah.
When I was drinking, what I learned about myself in sobriety was that I thought alcohol was like the fast track to connection. Like, let's get drunk, you know, like when I'm in my 20s, let's get drunk and then tell each other like everything, right? And it turns out that's not really how it works. That's not how true connection and relationships work. And so in sobriety, I have felt the deepest and also fast connections. Like when you're with another sober woman, like the deep connection that happens pretty fast, because you have a huge thing in common. Like you and I feel so connected to you.
It is so true,
right?
It is so true. Yes. And I feel the same.
Yeah, like there's just this like base level of connection and understanding, which I have always craved. Like I always want to feel. Small talk is my nightmare. Like I don't care about like anything except like tell me your childhood trauma and then I'm happy. You know, like I'll connect over that. Like tell me all the stuff. I love all of those things.
Yeah.
With my relationship, you know, I remember, well, first the like stupid kind of not even drunk but like tipsy fights are gone. Mm-hmm. Those just don't happen.
Isn't that awesome? Because they're stupid.
They're so,
and like, they're fueled by something that is not your own feeling.
It's not your own feeling.
Such a waste of time.
You can't remember it.
Yeah.
And you're like, I know I was mad. I was what was I mad about? Mm-hmm. And having a fight completely sober is really gratifying because then you know, like, oh, I'm actually feeling this, like, whatever it is, if it's hurt, something unfair, and it comes out as anger. And you know what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And then there's no, like, what did I say? What did I – like, having a sober fight with your spouse is different. And it's productive.
I was going to say there's resolution.
Yes.
A tipsy fight, which, gosh – bless Kyle in my heart when we were dating. it was just so, it is just like, are we really spending our time doing this round
it's
and
like
round?
Drama, right?
The Christmas tree.
Yeah.
It is just, and it is so unproductive. It is such a life suck.
Yeah.
It is just, it's just, it steals the joy of being in a relationship with someone. And so many of the feeling is not there because you're drunk, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe the thought is there.
Oh.
But like, there's no resolution. And like, you're right. Yeah. Like any sort of argument or any sort of disagreement. And sometimes like that conversation can end in, I still feel this way and you still feel this way. But you know what?
Yeah.
This is how we can resolve this. And we will resolve it. And we'll be best friends after. And it is, you can't do that when you're drunk because you're not.
No, you can't.
Irrational.
You can't. And if just one person is drunk, well, if two people are drunk, it's like, whoa, watch out, right? Like, that's just a hot mess. But even if one person is drunk, you're like, I can't. You're not going to talk to that person. Mm-hmm. And so and it's also trust, right? It's like my husband can trust me to, know how I'm feeling. And there's just such a great, my husband stopped drinking. Actually, he's doing a year no alcohol. He stopped in April. That's and great. So he's been like, and he was a party guy before I met him. And, you know, he would have like a couple of beers with golf. And my boundary was always like 2 beers. That's it. Cause I don't want him coming home drunk or like that doesn't feel good to me when I was sober. But yeah, so he's taking it off and he's loving it. And there's just a trust that's inherent when, you know, he's going out to dinner or with the guys. I'm not worried. Mm-hmm. Like he's going to act full of integrity as he does in his, you know, when his mind is right and not under the influence of alcohol, he feels the same about me. Like there's a trust there that you just can't get to if alcohol is invited in.
Yeah.
Because that's the wild card.
Yeah. It's the wild card. It's the gasoline.
Yes.
The flame.
Yeah.
So, you know, for people too that are thinking, because you kind of made this private decision internally. You didn't tell everyone around you, everybody's got to stop drinking. You can't do that.
Yeah, you know? No, you can't.
You really
unless,
have
unless
to.
You want like no friends and no, like no one wants
no
that.
No one. And you know, I remember like whenever I was in early recovery and I was like, okay, how do I go back and integrate into this life? I'm living with my sister who still participates. I'm living then with a spouse, you know, eventually who is still drinks and doesn't have an issue. I, you know, how do you do that? Well, I remember that they used to always say, if you really need that from someone, if you're living in the same home and you need to take all the alcohol out of your house, or you need that person to at least stop drinking around you, they said, ask that of that person. And they used to say, and I think that there's something to this. The only people, if they love you, the only people who will say, I can't do that or no, are the people who also have an issue. They were like, if people don't have an issue with it, they're going to be like, okay.
Right.
And I have found that that is true. Yeah. And, you know, because if someone's not attached to it, then they're like, oh, I can do that for you. Yeah.
Yes.
So we've, you know, gone through different phases, like in my relationships, and we didn't have it in the house for the first like few years. And then now it's like, yeah, I can be in the house. I don't mind it. But I've never really had in almost 11 years, I've never had a moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I just really want it again.
Right.
I have had moments where I felt sorry for myself when everyone around me was drunk because I was like, well, solo person in the room now. I don't want to talk to a bunch of drunk people.
No.
Like once I get 5 drinks in, I'm just like, you don't like, we're on different planes right now.
Yeah, you're
now,
like acting like a toddler and I'm still an adult. So.
And like, I'm not judging you for your choices because it's like,
it's
you can do what you want to do, but it's just not fun for me anymore.
Yeah.
I'm alone at the table. It's fine.
Yes.
You know, but it's, you know, the only people who will have an issue with you asking them that is maybe someone that needs to look at their own relationship with alcohol.
Yeah.
And I never try to be judgmental about it. Like I said, you and I show the shining light of the other side. But I also do want to mention things like that because you do need sometimes the cold hard truth of the reality, especially if you're not going to hit rock bottom. You need to hear something in a podcast that said, because we want you to have a better life. You and I. We want every woman and every mom and every person that has a strained relationship with alcohol or something else. We want them to reach the other side because it's so much better.
Oh.
It's just so awesome. And so, like, I don't feel bad saying, hey, if you can't. Or, like, I see a lot of people, like, justifying a lot of drinking while pregnant or different situations. And I'm just like, hey, if you really can't stop, just look at it. Just really look at that thought. Because I just wonder if you could have a brighter life on the other side. And I do not want people to think that I am judgmental, and I don't want to be judgmental because I'm not, but I know the life on the other side, and I know what my brain told me when I did have an issue and all the justifications that I made. And I felt the exact same way that you did. I hated it. I hated myself. I hated the way that I felt. I hated the relationships it was ruining. I hated that I couldn't keep a job. I hated the way I looked. I hated the way that I was. I just hated it all.
Yeah.
I hated the voices in my head. I hated my life that was a good life. And I just wonder how many people are out there walking the streets feeling the same way, but saying, oh, it's something else.
Right. You know? Or like, that's obviously not for me. Like, I obviously don't qualify.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I always want to say and make sure that women specifically know that anybody's reaction to your sobriety or your decision to do Dry January or your, your break from drinking, anybody's reaction, whatever it is in direct correlation to their relationship with alcohol. And I think I know I have been there when I heard someone else was not drinking. I'm like, wait, why? Really? Not even one? Because mm-hmm. in my mind, I couldn't imagine doing that. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to drink alone because then that means that I have to look at my relationship with alcohol and I don't want to do that.
I can too.
Like,
I can
drink
remember.
Drink with me.
Yeah. Drink with me because then it makes it okay.
Yeah. Then I don't have to look at mine because I'm not ready or I don't want to. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the identity shift because, too, you said, like, I was a party girl. It's like everybody was a party girl in college, mm-hmm. I feel like. Ironically, except for me until the very end. I was the
Wait,
one that
you
didn't
weren't?
Drink. No, I didn't. Really? I didn't drink my entire life until I was, like, at the very end of college. It was, like, my senior year. I think it was, like, my senior year or so. I was always the one, like, all my friends were so wild and, like, did everything. Yeah. But I just was like, I can have fun at the party without drinking. I just don't drink. And then as I did start drinking, it was definitely something that was like, she's got
now, here it
she
is.
Likes this.
There it is.
And then, you know, just like anything that is addictive, usually it starts out like fine. It's like, I can be the president of the United States. Like this medication makes me feel like I can do anything. Right. It's great in the beginning. And then it ruins your life.
And then you get addicted to it.
And you want to remember when you felt like that in the beginning. So, you know, in my early days of drinking, it's like, oh gosh, this is great. And when everyone else around you is doing it, it feels like more okay.
Totally.
But when you get in the motherhood circles and stuff and like your life is different and you have more responsibilities, that's when the problems do start to amplify. But then you've got the mom culture of the...
Which is insane.
I need this. And it's justified and it's okay because it's hard. Of course it's hard. But like we want your life to be better. And if it's making your life worse and that voice in your head is saying that, look at that so you can have a better life.
Yes, and making motherhood harder. Like that's what I think that one huge trick we've been taught is that alcohol is here to help us be better moms and to make motherhood easier. And I cannot tell you how much that is. That was born in a boardroom for alcohol marketers to sell more to moms because, you know, they needed a new market. Mm-hmm. And it's just not true. Mm-hmm. It makes it so much harder. Think about all the things moms have to do and then doing it with a hangover. It's like, oh, my God, it's so hard. Yeah. You asked about identity and, like, the shift of identity. I think that was hard. Mm-hmm. I really compare it to, like, settling down.
Yeah.
I felt that identity shift as being, you know, I liked being a party girl. I mean, I liked it. I didn't like it the next morning because I did feel the shame. Like when I look back, I'm like, that I felt so much shame. Yeah. But also I felt like power in being the party girl and being a bartender in college and being, you know, there's a power that comes with that. And I really liked that. And when I got married and started to have kids, I remember specifically being like, that part is over. And that's hard because there was
identity.
That was my identity for a long time. And so now what is going to replace that is, okay, now it's the nurturing of this family. And so stopping drinking was kind of similar to that, the identity shift of becoming a mom. And it's like, okay, now I'm shifting again and I'm evolving, and no longer am I trying to escape into a highly addictive substance and really getting caught up in that. But now I'm going to, okay, now I can be present as a mom.
Yeah.
And really like show my kids how to feel.
Yeah.
Right. Because like, we're not taught how to feel. And so just like showing them like, yeah, it's okay. Like all the feelings, feel all the feelings.
Yeah.
And like kind of, so, and it's a process. Like it doesn't happen overnight. And I think recognizing that it's hard, like leaving the identity of being someone who drinks, someone who loves wine, right? Because wine is an identity now. Like I'm a wine mom, or like I'm a mom who brings champagne to every party. I'm this woman. Leaving that behind is hard, and it's a shift.
Yeah, and it's hard in group settings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you go to rehab or you have the rock bottom, people are like, oh, well, they quit because this happened, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But when you choose to quit because of the voices in your head and the way that you've come to terms that I'm not feeling this way anymore, that is a heavier burden to bear. Mm. And so, like, how did you get through moments like that? I always say, I'm like, tell people that you don't drink anymore. It's way easier than, I just feel because you're making excuses, and the person that's had three drinks is going to end up talking you into drinking.
Yeah.
But just say, you've got to be strong in it and say, I am not drinking for 30 days. Or like, I am not drinking for, it's almost easier when you say, actually, I'm just not.
Yes. Yeah. You're not leaving it open to say like, well, maybe, or I'm thinking, you know, saying I'm a non-drinker, I think is really good. Like you're identifying now as someone who doesn't drink rather than you're just trying this on. Sometimes that could take a while to get there. Dry January is like the perfect opportunity. I'm doing dry January.
I agree.
Oh, got it. Okay. Obviously you've committed. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, my husband said when he first went on like his work trip and everyone was drinking, you know, Silver Oak, and he was like, oh, you know, and they asked him, he's like, I've committed to doing a year without alcohol. And saying I've committed, like no one's going to argue with that.
Yeah, because it's finality.
Yes.
It is like, they're not, they'll go on to the next person. But if you're like, oh, well, I'm just trying to like improve my health.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I'm just, you know, my wife's like doing this thing, so it's just, I'm going to do this thing. It's just like, just be firm in it.
Yes.
Okay. It's going to make it easier for you.
And like,
you
no have one's trouble, gonna argue. Like,
yeah.
Okay. So mine was very specific because I stopped on January 19th, 2020. Mm-hmm. And then like the world shut down not too far after that. So in looking back, I can see what really helped me is that I didn't have to navigate social stuff right away, which I think
social stuff stopped.
Because there was no social stuff. And I think that was really helpful. And I also didn't have to answer this question of, well, will I ever be social again? Because I knew I would. Mm-hmm. And so it gave me this like grace period of hibernation to say like, okay, I'm just going to use this time to figure it out. And you can do that for yourself. I don't think necessarily in dry January you have to, because you can just say, I've committed to doing dry January.
And it's so common, and so many people are doing it. So
it's so
easier,
much more common now. Yes. I think it's so, like, you can lean on that excuse. Even in February, you know what? I committed to doing dry January and I felt so good. I committed now to February too. Mm-hmm. Like, that is, no one's going to say, well, but who cares about commitment, right? To ourselves.
Right.
Like, no one's going to say that. And if
no
they do,
say that.
Walk away because they suck.
But you're right. Like, when there is a line in the sand, usually people don't cross it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I love too about, we have talked, this podcast is going to be so inspirational, I think, to people who are curious about this way of life, because they're going to be inspired. They're going to be inspired by you. They're going to be inspired by the things that you say. And I always think that being drawn to something is so much easier than like being pulled away from something.
Totally.
It is a positive way to do something that may not be easy. If it was easy, then everybody would do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, while I do have a little bit more of traditional recovery in my story, I do not attend AA meetings, and I haven't been to an AA meeting in probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. That wasn't something that I was personally drawn to. I did a 90 and 90. I think that they're really great for a lot of people. But I really had good treatment. I had a good therapist. And I had a different way that I did it. And I love the different way that you do it, because I think that there are multiple paths to the same thing.
Yeah.
And I love, too, that your platform in the last 4 years has evolved from, I'm going to inspire you and make you want this way of life, too. I'm actually going to give you a tool to help you achieve this way of life.
Yeah.
So the Sober Mom Life Cafe and the membership is something that's new since the last time that we spoke.
Yeah.
And I think it's fantastic because you now have retreats, which we, in my son's pajamas, went on.
Oh, those pajamas, you guys. Oh, those pajamas.
We are so happy to be part of that.
Yes, and thank you so much.
Of course.
So good.
Of course.
Big hit.
Happy to support a retreat like that. And you have spouse support groups. You have a lot of the things that traditional recovery used to provide, but I think that sometimes are tired or not for everyone. So can you tell us a little bit about this, about the cafe, about the membership program? I think it is amazing.
Thank you. It is probably the thing that I'm most proud of, because, you know, when I stopped, I felt alone. I felt like everyone else had this figured out and I was the only one. And being able to bring together women, so it's peer support, which means we've all been there. We're all at different stages and we're all helping each other. We have meetings every single day, sometimes 2-3 times a day.
It's amazing.
Yeah, we have, sound bath. We have meditation. We have monthly book club. We have Deb from Mocktail Mom comes and like teaches us a new mocktail every month. We have all these different, we have meetings for 1 year plus. We have early sobriety meetings. And it's all just a way to come together. And especially, you know, as moms, as busy women, we don't make this time for ourselves that we can come together and just like, let's talk about you. Like you just get to talk about you, talk about your successes, talk about what you're struggling with, talk about, you know, how do we set boundaries with our partners? How do we handle our mother-in-law who's coming, who we always drink with and we really don't want to this time? How do we, go to this party? Whatever it is. Like, and then we've all been there. And how do we work through shame? How do we talk to our kids about all of this stuff? So,
that's so amazing.
I love it so much. And we have women who have been coming for years just because it's really nice to, and it's all on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And so you're in, you know, with like maybe 30 other women, sometimes 40. There are smaller groups too. Like, when do we get to do that and just connect? Like,
it
connect.
Is amazing because you can drink in community all the time. The world and society is set up for drinking in social settings and like talking about all of this stuff. How amazing that, I hate it that like you have to really like form a group and have the membership and the cafe and have the AA meeting. Like we, the sober people have to form the group, you know? But like how amazing that you can do that in sobriety, because support is the thing that's going to help you when it gets hard.
Yes.
And that is the great thing about the rooms of AA. You can walk into that room, not know what's going to, and like, there are going to be people that will embrace you and help you.
Yeah.
And this is this version of sobriety's version of that.
Yeah.
And you're the first person, I think, that is doing that in a format like this. You're like the Bill of New Age sobriety.
That's so,
the Bill Wilson of New Age sobriety.
Okay, Mallory, that's a first.
You are. They're going to be telling the story of Suzanne in a book somewhere
one day.
That's
so funny.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's just the It's the best. It's one of those, you know, I host a meeting every Friday morning, and I come away from that so recharged and inspired by these women who are just being so brave. And, you know, we always talk about, like, when you go out there, the noise is going to be really loud. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to romanticize alcohol, and they're going to try and tell you it's the answer to everything. Like, come back here. Mm-hmm. Get centered. Like, remember what we're doing, and that it's a really big deal what you're doing. And then you feel more empowered to go out there. You know, it's just, it's my favorite.
And then we get to, amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. We get to do the retreats, which we do retreats in February and October. We have one coming up in February in Scottsdale. And then when you get to see that it translates, and these women you've been talking to on a screen, and who you feel like you know, because you do, you know them so well, and then you get to, like, hug them in real life. It's incredible. It's just, I'm always blown away by these women. I love them.
Yeah. It's amazing, because there's just something in the eyes of a sober woman who's chosen this way of life that is inspiring. It's inspiring. Yeah. I love everything about the content that you put out. I love everything about your recovery journey, just like as a person that's also in recovery. I think it's amazing. But I also love how it has translated online, how it has inspired other people to become also sober women or sober moms.
Yeah.
And I am so thrilled, Suzanne, that we finally get a book. And, like, when does the book come out? Because a book is the hardest thing in the entire world. But books live forever. Books live forever. And this message from the new Bill Wilson here.
Stop it.
Bill Wilson is the guy that, like, started AA back 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So this book is going to stand the test of time. I know all of the hard work and everything that you are pouring into it. It is going to change so many lives. Is going to help so many women find their way to this version of life. And I am thrilled for this book to come out. It is so needed in our world, and I am so excited for it. So tell me about the book. I want to end on that note, because I know there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be like, I want more.
Oh, thank you. Okay, Mallory, you are always so supportive, and I appreciate you so much. Like, do you remember when we talked about it, when it was, I think, I was, like, trying to get the deal, or I was, you know, and you were, like, talking me through it. Like, I cannot believe now it's written. It's you know, I got a deal with Harper One. I will tell you.
I love Harper One. I love Harper One.
I do too. Like, they've been incredible. I'll tell you that selling this book, for some reason, there's a thought in publishing that this space is saturated. And I'm like, you guys,
no one is writing about sobriety. Not like one single person.
It's not. And that's what I kept saying. I'm like, but just believe me, okay? Like, women, even men, like, this book is needed. Like, we need to talk about sobriety in a different way. And Harper One, really, and my agent Colleen, who's, like, amazing, they saw it and they were like, yeah, let's do this. And so I'm so excited. There's stories that I've never told, which means a lot because I talk a lot. And so there's stories you've never heard. And this is for all the people who message me on Instagram, leave comments on the podcast, like, okay, but, like, really, like, how? Like, tell me exactly how. This is what it is. So it's part memoir, it's part guide. I walk you through all of it. And it's I can't believe it. It still, to me, feels like it still feels insane. Yeah. It is like, it's like birthing a child.
It is.
So I'm excited, and I'm coming to you when it's out.
I'm excited. So, like, fall of 2025-ish?
Yeah.
And I am so excited, yes, to have you back on the podcast, and we'll talk about the book specifically, but you guys get excited. I'm sure that it'll be available for pre-order at some point in time.
Yes.
Reveal the cover and the title. I know the title, but I'm not going to reveal it.
I know. Mallory told me I have to do a rollout. I didn't even know that.
I was like, do people know the title yet? And she was like, no. And I was like,
I don't think so.
I'm not going to say the title then, because it needs to be a big rollout of the title and the cover.
I was like, oh, okay. You guys, Mallory just tells me everything. I just follow her lead because she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes not, but sometimes. I've just done it before. And, you know, you and I, we've learned a lot from doing things before. And then just living life, you know, as two sober women.
Oh. You are my inspiration. Like, I'm telling you, you guys, if you listen to this podcast,
same about you.
Well, you listen to this podcast, you love her online. And let me just tell you, she is like exactly the same and so warm and loving and just a bright light. So
that means more to me than you know. And I feel the same about you for real, because, like I said, and like I've said several times in this podcast, I think it's really powerful to be drawn to something you want. Mm. I think that in traditional rooms of AA, they always say, pick a sponsor of someone that you want. You want the life that they have. You want the way that they act. You want the relationships that they have. Pick a sober woman that lives the life that you want to live, that parents the way you want to parent, that seems like they have a good relationship. Like, see the good in that. And don't ignore it. And don't let alcohol, the alcohol that's making you hate your life, talk you into being like, well, she just got it all good. No, she made a choice, actually. Yeah. And she changed her life. And, like, it's really cool what happened on the other side. So let Suzanne, you are truly, you're very inspiring to me, because you gave a voice to something that I felt on the other side of my sobriety. And because I came through a traditional path, I gave partially like a voice to that in my Living Fully book, and I talk about it a lot, but you really, really took it to another level. And I admire that, because I know it's changing people's lives.
Aww,
it's really awesome. And I'm very excited for the book. So, thank you for coming on. This is a busy season.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Thank you. And there are so many people in my life that are like your biggest fans. And like this morning, everyone's like, oh my gosh, you could do it. To have her on the podcast. Like, everybody was just so excited. So I know people will be thrilled. And also, like, this is coming out in January. Dry January. Like, start it today.
Start it today.
Just do try it.
Now.
It.
Why
like,
not
we
now?
Keep saying, why not? Just try it.
Yep.
It doesn't taste that good. Okay.
No, just try it. It's not that good. It's not that good.
Good. Cake is good.
Oh my God. You and I and our sugar stuff. I just had some sugar right before I came on. You guys, sugar. Oh. Yeah, just.
I look what I got in my purse. Sugar. I got a Dexcom. I'm about to. Like, I got to put my blood sugar monitor back on because I got gestational diabetes.
Wait, okay, I almost had that. I think I had that with my first, but I did so many walks around the hospital.
Walks are crazy. Like, it will bring the blood sugar down. You can't walk the alcohol off, but you can walk the blood sugar down.
You can walk the blood sugar off.
Because you can't walk after the alcohol, but the sugar, you can still walk.
Sugar. Yeah. And, like, no one's ever lost their family over too much sugar or gotten a DUI over too much sugar.
No. You know what I mean? It causes other problems.
Blackout.
But,
other problems. But you don't black out.
You don't black out from it. I sometimes feel like I black out when I'm eating it.
Kind of
like,
do.
My dad's, I remember last Thanksgiving, he was like, I think the cat got on the bar last night and ate the pies. And I was like,
Must
it was
have.
Me. It was, that was the cat. The fork marks that he thought were like the little cat teeth. It was me. So now every time he's like, oh, a cat got into the pie again. We don't even have a cat anymore. So anyways,
yeah, it was definitely the cat. That's so funny.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing your time and your story and just the light on the other side of a sober life. I think that you are amazing. I'm going to link all things Suzanne at the end of this, but Instagram, I feel like, is where I see you most show up. You have basically everything under the sun. You have the membership now, and you've had the podcast, and like the, you know, there's so many things depending on like where people like to consume this type of content.
I'm all over the place.
All over the place. Anywhere that's good on the internet, anywhere. You are. So,
yes. Well, thank you again for having me.
Of course. Okay. Well, I will link. Thank you guys all for listening to this episode of the Living Fully podcast. I hope that it inspires you in some way. Thank you so much to Suzanne for coming on. I will link everything that we have talked about on in these show notes. And then when this book comes out for pre-order, I will throw that up on my Instagram as well. So thank you guys for listening. Tune in 2 weeks for more. Hey, friend, if you're loving the show, I'd love to hear from you. Head to your podcast app, scroll down to where it says ratings and reviews, and share your thoughts well with a rating and review. Your words might be just what the next person needs to tune in and start living fully today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.